Welcome back, Richard. It's good to see you this morning.
Good morning. I won't say anything at all because we're off to a good start. So
We are off
keep
to a
up the
good
good work.
start. But I'm so excited because, as we promised our listeners last week, we have a guest with us today, and we're so excited to be talking to this guest because we often talk on the podcast about different treatments and different concerns and issues related to mental health conditions, especially depression and post-traumatic stress disorder and some of those kinds of things. And we actually have an expert that we're going to talk with today about some novel, some innovative, some new treatment ideas for some of those conditions.
Right. This is a medication that many of you have heard about, and there are many, many questions that we've been asked. So we thought, well, let's get somebody in here who is knowledgeable about the subject, and he has graciously agreed to bring us up to date. He is Dr. Cassidy, Dr. Curtis Cassidy. I did not know this about Dr. Cassidy. We've been friends for more years than either of us would admit, but you're a ninth generation native Floridian.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to St. Augustine.
You need to have a special license plate or something. I mean, I've never met a ninth generation native Floridian. But you were born and raised in Lakeland, graduated from Lakeland High School, did your undergraduate training at Davidson College in North Carolina, medical degree from the University of Florida, and you completed your internship and residency in psychiatry at the University of South Florida. And I know that you also did a fellowship. Didn't you do a fellowship at Yale?
Yes, in forensics.
In forensic. Oh, that was in forensic psychiatry. Okay. Did a fellowship at Yale. Dr. Cassidy we consider him one of those cutting edge kind of guys. You were one of the first ones to use transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yes, back in mid-2000s.
Right, which was really a novel approach to treatment-resistant depression at the time. And you've also, with your knowledge of psychopharmacology, you've now moved into the treatment, the chemical treatment, drug treatment of treatment-resistant depression, first with Spravato, and I think you were one of the first to provide Spravato around in this area, right? Right. And now we're into the area of ketamist, and that's the topic that we want to talk about today, because it's our understanding that the use of this compound has changed over time, and now the most recent version is something called ketamist, and that's what we want to talk about today.
So that's a little bit of a background, but welcome, Dr. Cassidy, to the Mental Breakdown podcast.
Well, thank you both for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah, we've been friends and colleagues for a long time and share a lot of families and couples and patients that we work with, and it's great to have your expertise here. But let's start out. Can you just share with us a little bit about your practice and what you do and just share with us a little bit about you.
Sure. I started private practice here in Lakeland back in 2006, and really kind of the concept that I've wanted to bring forward is the fact that in mental health, the delivery of mental health is really kind of always taken the back burner in medicine. It's always kind of the last thing that people think about, and really trying to provide higher quality health care, really being patient focused and patient centered, has really been kind of the driving concept behind my practice and the care that I deliver, and really kind of cutting out the middlemen, the insurance carriers that try to dictate what kind of medications we can give, how much time we can spend with patients, has always been a focus of my practice. And it's really kind of my focus going forward as well, because at least in the delivery of psychiatry, I think that there's a lot better way to do it. And it's worked here in Lakeland, Florida. And my goal is to kind of continue to expand that further out as I go forward.
That's fantastic. And we've talked on the podcast many times before about some of those frustrations and limitations that come about when, you're talking about managed care and insurance companies and how we're kind of bound by certain rules and limitations. And so it's great to know that there's folks out there that are kind of breaking some of those barriers. So that's fantastic. Right. So we're going to talk, as Richard mentioned a minute ago, we're going to talk a little bit about KetaMist, but KetaMist is a novel delivery system or a novel presentation of a substance that's been around for a while, ketamine. So tell us a little bit about what brought you into that world of using or thinking about that as a treatment.
Absolutely. So in mental health and psychiatry, one of the unfortunate realities is the over 40% of the patients with depression and many mental health conditions are treatment resistant, meaning that the conditions that we have, the medications, the therapies, the interventions that we have just don't work for a lot of people, for almost half of the people out there in some of these conditions. And so the current treatments and modalities that we have in psychiatry leave a lot to be lacking and a lot to be asked for. So really, it's always been kind of a focus of mine is to help those people that seemingly can't be helped, that are called treatment resistant. And, you know, the term treatment resistant, it's kind of a charged word because they're really not treatment resistant. We just haven't found the right treatment for them. And until we find the right treatment for them, they're just not getting better. And so that's really kind of the focus behind why I had the first TMS machine in Florida, why I was one of the first people to prescribe Spravato in Florida back in the early in 2019. Right. And it's really kind of why I've moved my practice into ketamine itself, trying to stay at that forefront, at that cusp of those people that are in such critical need of getting better.
What exactly is ketamine?
So ketamine is an anesthesia drug that was synthesized synthetically in a lab back in the 1960s.
Okay.
So it's been around for a long time, 60 plus years, and it's still used in every operating room for anesthesia. It's a very safe anesthesia medication. It's usually used as an adjunct or to kind of induce anesthesia. So it's not the predominant anesthesia medication, but it helps assist with anesthesia. And so every operating room still uses it. They use it in Lakeland Regional here in town. They use it in veterinarian clinics. Dentists use it. Ambulance carry it because it's just such a safe medication when you need anesthesia or to get someone to the point where they're not going to be like noticing the injury that they have or they need some intervention.
Oh, okay. That's why first responders use it.
Correct.
Because
correct.
I know that it's on ambulances and they give ketamine to patients who are either aggressive or hard to manage. I know they use ketamine. It's also used for epilepsy, isn't it?
Sometimes it's used for that. You know, like in the first responder situation, they use all of these situations, they use really high doses or anesthesia level doses. Right. And say you've had a horrible car accident and your femur is sticking out of your leg. And so you don't go into psychogenic shock and potentially die. They're going to give you ketamine to put you in a place where they can then stabilize you and then get you to the hospital to take care of that injury.
So it's an anesthesia for first responders, but very quick acting, high dose.
Quick acting, the IV, it acts within seconds. If you give them a shot of it, it acts within minutes. So it's a very rapid.
So how do we get from anesthesia and first responders to treatment for depression?
So that's a great story. And that's kind of, it harkens back to the 1970s. So you remember Timothy Leary, you know, tune in and drop out, the Harvard professor promoting psychedelics. You know, ketamine itself is a mild psychedelic. It's not on that same level of other psychedelics like LSD or psilocybin. It's going to produce such a psychedelic experience, but it's very mild. And so probably about a decade ago in psychiatry, researchers continued to try to find other chemical compounds for treatment-resistant depression and PTSD and OCD and other conditions where there's just a huge unmet need. And so medications like ketamine were used and done in trials or experimentation, and it was found that it actually does in sub-anesthesia doses really help a lot of conditions. And so a lot of journal articles and publications started to gain traction around a decade ago. And kind of on the heels of that, anesthesiologists started to do IV ketamine clinics for things like treatment-resistant depression. So about a decade ago, mainly in major metropolitan areas, big cities, you would see ketamine clinics starting to be advertised. And it was somewhat fringy back then. And people would go in and have a series of ketamine sessions for their conditions. And usually that was about two a week for 3 weeks to kind of start and to see if someone would be a responder to ketamine. So they would give you an IV in your arm, start an IV. You'd have an infusion pump, just like the same infusion pumps you see in hospitals. And they would give you ketamine at a slower rate over about 45 minutes or so, and see if that would help your depression, PTSD, anxiety, OCD, and addiction. Really, that's kind of the main things that ketamine can assist with, or chronic pain as well.
Wow, that's
I don't want to jump too far ahead, but most of us are familiar with SSRIs, and we kind of know how SSRIs work. Is there a simple explanation for the mechanism of action of ketamine with psychiatric disorders?
Yes. Yeah, so like everything in psychiatrically, we think we know what it does, but as time goes on, we figure something else out. So kind of the theory, or what we think right now, is it's an NMDA, which is a certain type of receptor, and a glutamate antagonist, which means that it increases the levels of NMDA and glutamate in the brain. It also is a mu opioid, which is a type of pain relieving thing. Everybody knows what an opiate is. A mu opioid is a type of receptor in that opiate receptor system, agonist. So it kind of turns, so it gives some mild pain relief. That's how it does the pain relief. It's thought that by increasing glutamate, it can be very effective for depression.
Now, glutamate is the brain's primary
excitatory
neurotransmitter, correct?
Yes.
So what you're trying to do is elevate, what it would do is elevate mood, is that?
Yes, it elevates mood that way. And it also works on another neurotransmitter called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that actually causes neurons to make new connections. And we know from mice brains and mice models that if you take that, there's this one great study where they took a mouse and they first did a scan, a brain scan of that mouse, and were able to show axon and dendrites, which is the neuron in the brain, and the little dendrites make other connections. And they took a baseline. Then they exposed that mouse brain to something called cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And you got loss of those connections over about a 24-day period. Then they just gave that mouse one dose of ketamine. And after one dose of ketamine, 24 hours later, you got new growth of those dendrite connections. Like back in when I was in med school, that was sci-fi that brains, neurons could grow. That didn't exist. And so that's another mechanism of action, that maybe the brain starts to heal itself and repair the connection. And so kind of I tell patients when I'm talking to them, back to the Timothy Leary days and the, my brain's making all these new connections when I'm doing a psychedelic, it's beyond just them thinking that they're making new connections. They're actually making new connections on an anatomical level. And so really it's probably a combination of all these different mechanisms that we think it has some of those antidepressant, anti-anxiety properties.
That's amazing. And I think the history there is so important because, which is strange for me to say, because Richard's usually the one that talks about history. Often podcast.
So much longer history there.
That's true.
Speaks with authority.
But it's we talked before about how like in the 1950s, when we learned about, antidepressant and antipsychotic medications sort of accidentally based upon their use in the hospitals and, in different, with whether it was anesthesia or, antihistamines and things like that were used. And they found, wow, this also helps somebody's, psychotic symptoms, or it helps their mood symptoms. And so it starts a whole line. And so it's interesting that, ketamine here is yet another example of it was sort of found out accidentally based upon their use in the hospitals. And like other medications, I think a lot of people are going to recognize ketamine because of some of the misuse, right? Because it was used for a while in the club scene, negatively, right? Is it the same thing, or is what you use different than that, or what they use in hospitals and on ambulances and stuff, is that different, or is it the same stuff?
It's the same stuff. People just get a hold of it, they divert, and then they misuse it.
Right.
It's a synthetic compound, so drug dealers can actually synthesize ketamine. They can get the raw components, or they can get it from labs. And I tell people when they get kind of, oh, it's ketamine, it's used on the street, I tell them, well, don't you need a Xanax if you have a panic attack, or a clonazepam? Yet that's another synthesized drug that's misused on the street. This isn't anything new, but it still has a significant clinical utility, but you just got to be careful with it, use it in the right context, and really make sure you monitor it.
Absolutely. So people don't really need to be afraid of it when it's used therapeutically in a medical setting.
Absolutely. 100%.
Awesome.
So you have a patient come in they certainly are prepared for treatment. How do you deliver it? When you say ketamist, what's actually happening? What would you explain to a patient?
So really, when a patient comes in, first of all, we have to do a full evaluation to make sure that they're an appropriate patient for ketamine therapy or ketamist therapy, because ketamine is not FDA indicated for anything but anesthesia. And so really using ketamine in these contexts is what's considered off label. So it's really up to the judgment of the clinician doing that evaluation if this patient is appropriate. And ketamine certainly isn't appropriate for everybody. If someone has psychosis, it's not appropriate for them because it can worsen psychosis. It's a potential psychedelic. It is a psychedelic. So we want to steer clear in those cases. It's not appropriate for women who are pregnant or breastfeeding. It's not appropriate for anybody who's had a brain aneurysm or things like that, because it can spike blood pressure in the brain. And it does spike blood pressure in a lot of people. So we kind of monitor their blood pressure. So, you know, when we do ketamist, what we do is we deliver the medication over a 2-hour period in the office. And so the person is actually in the office. They're in a private room. They're supervised. We monitor them. We keep our eyes on them. We do their blood pressure at the beginning and then about 40 minutes in and at the end. And we really keep an eye on them to make sure that they're okay. They have call buttons to push if they need a medical assistant or intervention from me. You know, really the cool thing about, or the really neat thing about the ketamist delivery system is it's a totally unique way of delivering ketamine. You know, traditionally there's that IV ketamine that we talked about a little bit earlier. There's also, you can give ketamine in a shot. So you can get a shot of ketamine. You can also take ketamine orally. There's a lot of companies online that prescribe ketamine. And I really think that that's, you know, akin to almost inappropriate, I guess is the way I would put it, because there's no in-person face-to-face evaluation. You're giving a DEA controlled substance through the internet. They have access to maybe misuse it at home. They don't have a clinician at the office to be there if something goes wrong. It's just not something that I support. I really think in-office medically supervised ketamine is the way to go. And certainly if these other psychedelics become approved, I think really having another provider there for if something goes wrong is really helpful. It's kind of like delivering a baby. You know, the reason to deliver a baby when there's medical care there is if something goes wrong. You know, if something goes right, you might not need that person, but it's really if something goes wrong. And so ketamist is a way of delivering ketamine where there aren't any needles. There's no IV infusion pumps. There's no nasal sprays. Spravato, which we haven't talked about yet, is a big pharma way of delivering ketamine through a nasal spray. So really the unique thing about ketamist is with an infusion pump, you've got this pump that's next to you. You've got an IV bag. You've got a needle in your arm, and then the ketamine is being delivered by that pump continuously. And if you have severe anxiety, trauma, PTSD, you're out of control. That pump is going, and you're going to wherever the ketamine is going to take you. Sometimes it takes you to this dissociative state where you feel very disconnected from yourself. That can be very frightening. That can be very scary for a lot of people. With the way ketamist is, the patient is able to deliver ketamine at their own rate. If they don't like the way that they're feeling, if they get a little scared, they can go slower. If they really think that dissociative state is very helpful to work through some things on a psychological level, they can go quicker. And so that's kind of how ketamist is really unique. The other way that ketamist is unique is I'm able to deliver it at a price point that's a lot less than an IV treatment. You know, the average IV treatment, they charge $400 to $800 or even more per session, which is very exorbitant. Spravato, which is interesting, and we can talk about that more if you want to get into that. The nasal spray, the lower dose is like $700 to $800 just for the medication. The higher dose is $1,400 to $1,600 for the higher dose. And the problem with that is it's only two doses. It's only fixed dosing. Whereas if you do the IV ketamine, the shot ketamine, or Ketamist, you're able to really personalize that dose. You're able to make it be a weight-adjusted dose, which is really the gold standard of ketamine delivery for things like depression and other mental health disorders, because you want to be able to titrate that dose if the patient needs a higher dose. With Spravato, you're not able to do that, and it's just incredibly expensive.
Yeah. That makes good sense. And yeah, it's great that you're able to tailor it specific to the patient. And it sounds like with Ketamist, the patient can do it him or herself. They can make some of those adjustments themselves as they're going through it.
Absolutely. The actual dose itself is calculated or figured out by the clinician administering it, but then the actual delivery of it, the patient is able to really control that.
That's great.
Well, clarify, I have one question. When you say a mist, it brings to mind, I don't know, how does the person get the mist?
You know, part of that is the secret sauce of what Ketamist really is.
Okay.
And so that is kind of the thing that makes Ketamist so unique.
Okay. So you'll explain that when they come in.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because I have this vision of all kinds of visions. I think of this mist, you know, that you're walking into a room and you just breathe and, you know, but you'll explain that when they get there.
Yeah. The delivery of ketamine, it's very safe for other people who might be in the room with them. They're not going to be exposed really to any significant amount of ketamine. We have patients who come in and bring their dogs with them. They might bring a family member with them, other kind of things to make them feel comfortable during the treatment. Really, patients feeling comfortable, safe, supported during the treatment is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes ketamine clinics just have sterile, like tile floors and three or four people with curtain sheets in between. I really don't think that it gives a person the full experience to allow them to really get what they could potentially get from a ketamine treatment.
Okay. Yeah, there's some other research, and I've read about that kind of how important the environment is. And I think that's a great point that you're making, because, you know, especially as you've said, you know, ketamine is a psychedelic, and there's a lot of new research and work coming out with different psychedelics and been found to be very beneficial. But the nature of the environment is really important to help the patient remain calm, comfortable, and to make that experience as positive as possible, which is one of the reasons why, you know, proper treatment with it is so much more beneficial than when people misuse it, you know, when they're out wherever using it and then they have a really horrible experiences. So I think that's fantastic that you're making that point and that you attend to that so well at your practice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, quick question. I do remember Timothy Leary and the you guys were young when I was old when Timothy Leary was doing this. But you guys were very young then, Bernie, you were very young. And so is this the realization of Timothy Leary's dream? I mean, it kind of is, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, really, on the heels of ketamine, there's really a boon in research into other compounds like ecstasy, MDMA, psilocybin, really taking a second look at these compounds and saying, hey, these can really have some very profound healing effects for people with mental health conditions.
Do you use any of those others in your practice?
I would love to, but it's not legal to do so yet.
Oh, it's not?
It's not yet. Psilocybin has been in the last couple of legislative committees to try to be able to be used in doctor's offices in the state of Florida. Again, this is a state-by-state thing, but it really hasn't made it out of committee for various lobbying reasons.
So this isn't... you're not permitted to use it in the state of Florida. Are there other states? But there are other states using those.
Well, the one state is Colorado that allows you to do psilocybin so far.
Oh, so all this literature that we read about these well, they're not really medications. All of these compounds, they're not being used clinically.
Clinical trials, they are, where they can get an exception to what's called the DEA Schedule 1. DEA Schedule 1 medicines are the ones that are outlawed, that are criminal to possess. You can get an exception to run a clinical trial, but in an actual clinical setting where you're treating patients like myself, it's not an option yet. Hopefully very soon, but not yet.
So all that information is coming out of clinical trials, not clinical use, not everyday clinical use.
Correct, unless it's in Colorado, I guess.
Yeah, except in Colorado. But so many things are different. Now, as we're sort of frontline practitioners, clinicians, what would be an appropriate referral? How do we know what would be an appropriate referral from us to you?
So an appropriate referral would be somebody who's not getting better. You know, they're taking psychotropic medications from either their primary care provider or their psychiatric provider, and they're just not getting where they need to get. And that would be someone who would be an appropriate referral. Another appropriate referral could be somebody who has significant depression or anxiety and says, I don't want to take a daily medication. I don't want to take something that I have to take every day for 4 to 6 weeks to see if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm not good with taking my medicines every day, or I just feel so bad, I want to try to feel better quicker. That would be an appropriate referral.
If they say, well, how many doses or how many visits does it require? What am I getting myself into? How many times would they come in for treatment?
So the way I like to think about it and the way I explain it to my patients is we have kind of this acute phase of treatment. We have a taper phase of treatment, and then we have a potential maintenance phase of treatment. Okay. And so in that acute phase of treatment with Ketamist, I've really followed the same protocol that IV ketamine does, which is twice a week for 3 weeks with at least maybe one day in between, and to see if you're going to get better, to see if you're going to respond to ketamine. About 70% of people-ish, somewhere in that range, respond to ketamine, which is really better than oral medications, that response rate. And so what we do in my clinic is we have you come in that twice a week for 3 weeks. And every time we come in, we have you do something called the GAD-7 and the PHQ-9. Those are quick rating scales to measure anxiety and depression that you guys are very familiar with, to see if they're numerically getting improvement every time they come in. Mm-hmm. I've seen people respond robustly at the first treatment. I've seen people take up to 6 treatments to start to respond. Okay. Why? And I have no clue. I really don't know why. But if that person's still getting improvement at that 6 treatment, I'm going to keep them at that twice a week until they plateau. If they don't have any improvement at that 6 treatment, we kind of call it a day and we look at yet other options. And there are other options to try to really help that person. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the person who responds, once they've kind of plateaued and are getting better, we'll enter what's the taper phase. And for me, what I do for that is I do once a week for 2 weeks. If they're still doing well, we're going to space that out to every other week for the following month. So that's really 4 treatments over 6 weeks is that taper phase. And then at that point, they could just come back as needed if their symptoms start to recur, or if their symptoms are starting to kind of ebb back, they'll stay in maintenance. And I would say probably about 20 to 30% of people need maintenance, and they come in usually every 2 to 4 weeks. So that's kind of that bell curve of when people are coming in. Their symptoms start to come back if they're not doing maintenance. So it really then becomes an ongoing medication. Again, not one that you take every day, but kind of another ongoing medication. A lot of people who need the maintenance have failed multiple medications, you know, 5, 6, 10 antidepressants. Some people who failed ECT or shock therapy, that TMS or the magnetic therapy, you know, really some of the very significant treatment resistant patients really respond well if we do a maintenance protocol.
Okay. And you mentioned that it's you can use it with patients with depression, anxiety, or PTSD.
Or OCD, or even addiction, alcoholism.
Okay. So addiction as well.
I like to explain that, that makes sense, that it kind of says it's not snake oil that works for everything, like a lung tonic, is it really kind of helps you not focus on what you don't need to focus on. You know, if you're dealing with depression, your mind goes to things that are negative. You're like a moth to the flame, to the negativity, or just can't see hope in things. If it's PTSD, you're not focused on that, maybe that traumatic event that continues to be in that hamster wheel in your mind, kind of that same hamster wheel with addiction and OCD, you still might get in that hamster wheel, but your mind is going to be able to get out of it much quicker.
Right.
And okay. does it help, or is there any research that suggests whether how beneficial it is to be in a traditional talk therapy at the same time you're going through a person's going through the ketamine treatment?
Well, as you both know, I'm a huge believer in therapy. I mean, I think, you know, medication and therapy are peanut butter and jelly. You know, each is good by themselves, but together is where the magic happens. And so, you know, there's a lot of debate of whether or not you need actual therapy during the ketamine session. And, you know, that's really very person specific. For me, what I've seen is therapy during the time that you're getting treatment during those 3 weeks is incredibly beneficial, because you're going to be very receptive to insights, very receptive to make permanent change in your life. I've had one therapist who's actually undergone the therapy, and he told me at the, you know, the first treatment, he was like, "Hey, this is amazing. I want to get certified to be a guide or a therapist during the treatment. I think this is so good." And then after about the third or fourth treatment, he came back and told me, "You know what? I think, you know, I might have jumped it a little bit there. You know, I think during the treatment, if no one's in the room, their mind's going to go where it kind of needs to go to heal. If I'm a therapist, I might be guiding them where maybe I think they need to go. Maybe just it's better to let their mind go where they need to go during the treatment. But then I'm going to do therapy after that same day or the next day to really kind of solidify some of those insights."
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. So for those, you know, perhaps other clinicians that are listening, or maybe even, you know, individuals who would like to find out more, what is the best way to refer patients to your practice, or refer oneself to your practice to seek treatment?
Absolutely. Really kind of the best way to do it is to call my main phone number, which I'm sure you'll have listed on after the podcast, and just leave a message and say, "I have a patient that or a client that I need to get in for ketamist," or they can call themselves and say, "Hey, I want to get in for ketamist." Really, you know, this is such a robust treatment that really helps so many things. My goal in my practice is to get all of those people in within 1 week to get started on it, to really get better. And really, that's kind of unheard of. And in mental health, as you both know, we're in such a huge crisis that the waiting time to get some treatment now is months, you know, right, on the good side, if not 6 months and things like that, which is just really horrible. But with ketamist, I'm trying to get the treatment out to as many people as I can and really trying to meet that need.
Good. Okay. Good to know. Okay. Yeah.
That's great. Well, we will have a link to your website and to your practice site, as well as the site for ketamist. And you had mentioned before we started recording that on the ketamist site, there are other articles and resources for people to read if they want more information.
Absolutely. Yes. That's a great place.
Yeah. So if you're looking for more information and you want to know more about what's happening there, you can check out that link and you can read more articles and more information. We'll also have links to your social media, because, you know, that's where everyone lives, is in social media right now. So, but Dr. Cassie, this is very exciting, and we definitely look to, or in hope to, learn more about how it's going for you and your patients, and we'll keep referring patients to you and hopefully keep finding more benefits.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with both of you today and to really try to get this out there to really help as many people as we can as quickly as possible.
Well, you're always welcome. So if you get the urge to come back, we'll do it at your convenience. So just let us know.
Wonderful. Thank you both.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, so that is it for today. We'll be back next week and talk about, who knows what we'll talk about next week. It could be, you know, it's getting close to Christmas. It's getting close to the new year. Who knows? It could be anything, right?
It will be anything. So we'll let you know. Stay tuned.
That's right. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.